All right. Those of you who are in here get to hear scripture being read. All right. We have four people who are going to be giving their testimonies this morning. So we need to get rolling. I went downstairs and looked, and I could not find the shepherd's crook that we had, that we were going to use to pull people off the stage if they were going too long. So you're going to be on your own. All right, Psalm 78. Oh, my people, hear my teaching. Listen to the words of my mouth. I will open my mouth in parables. I will utter hidden things, things from of old, what we have heard and known, what our fathers have told us. We will not hide them from their children. We will tell the next generation the praiseworthy deeds of the Lord, his power, and the wonders he has done. He decreed statutes for Jacob and established the law in Israel, which he commanded our forefathers to teach their children, so the next generation would know them, even the children yet to be born. And they, in turn, would tell their children. Then they would put their trust in God and would not forget his deeds, but would keep his commands. The psalm that talks about telling the praiseworthy deeds of the Lord, his power and the wonders that he's done, and that's what these testimonies are really all about, proclaiming those mighty and praiseworthy deeds of the Lord. And if you caught at the end of that I read, why or what the result of that proclamation is, it says, so the next generation would know. If we don't keep telling the stories, but it also says that as a result of the proclamations, that people would put their trust in God and that they would obey him. So when we have opportunities to make proclamations of what the Lord has done in our lives, we need to take advantage of those. So I said, we have four people this morning, and Elijah Cook Coker, one of the brand new members, is going to come share his story with us. Elijah, come on up.
Do I use this? Is it on? Okay. Good morning, everybody. As Warren said, my name is Elijah Cook Coker, for those that I have not met yet. And I will be sharing my testimony with you. I have not practiced, so I don't know how long this will be, but Warren will snag me by my ankles, I'm sure, if I go over. So I grew up with my grandparents on my mom's side. They raised my brother and I, older brother. We lived with them, I was probably about five since I started living with them. My brother was a little older, seven or so. I don't really know how that went about, just happened to be, and I knew my mom and dad as I grew up. I just didn't live with them, so it was kind of our normal family situation. Let's see. So I knew my grandfather as a strong believer. As far as being a Christian, I couldn't quite say that. I've always wrestled with that fact or that question in my life, but I always knew him to be a strong believer. He didn't grow up that way. He grew up in a pretty rough household from what I've been told, and that's unfortunate, but he chose to believe in God at some point of his life, and it was that way since I knew him. My grandmother grew up Catholic, and at some point she left that faith, and she also followed in my grandfather's steps of being a believer as well. So we always grew up going to church. We moved around a lot. My grandfather was a Marine, so I think he got used to that lifestyle and he liked it. So it was just us four in a camper attached to a pickup, just traveling around. When the earliest memories I have are living in Texas, we lived in a town called Bastrop. It's an hour west, at least one direction, of Austin, Texas. So Austin is the first church that we started to attend. I would do Boy Scouts with them, so I would go out every summer. We'd do about a week, 2-week camp with my brother and I. So I had a pretty strong relationship with the church, but not with God, though I thought otherwise. I mainly tried to live off of my grandfather's faith. As I learned later on, you cannot do that. So it was quite interesting. But yeah, we were very active in the church, I would say. All of us, we attended every Sunday as far as I can remember. And like I said, we would do church activities. They would put us in Sunday school, stuff like that, and just try to keep us out of trouble, basically. I mean, it's two little boys. We seem to always find trouble. But as we got older, I'm trying to read this paper. It's not going well. Give me just a moment. Okay. So we lived in Bastrop maybe 2 to 3 years. Like I said, we moved around quite a bit. We ended up in a small town called McDade, Texas. It's population 3,000 to 5,000. So a little smaller than Wichita. And I started a youth group with some friends from church from school there. So that was pretty fun. My brother, I think, ended up moving out. He went to live with my mom in Wichita at some point. So it was just my grandparents and I. And I had these friends in a youth group, and I had some cousins started coming to live with us. So one of my cousins, she was closer to my age. She's a year under me. So we both were a part of the youth group. We were with them maybe a year or two. We'd go to Christian concerts, go to other churches, and because we were a smaller group, so we would try to collide with other churches as much as we could. I got baptized, I don't want to mess up this date, when I was 12, and, I got baptized first when I was 12 through the youth group. The pastor in the group baptized me. He was my friend's father. He, I think, was a pastor before I'd met him for many years, as far as I knew. So I trusted him, and I figured he was a strong man of faith, and he took it serious. So I allowed him to baptize me, and it was a pretty hard to describe moment. I thought I was on top of the world, I guess. And I had a misunderstanding of what being baptized and being a Christian was. I thought, now that I'm baptized, I can do whatever I want and I'll be cleared. And that's unfortunate, and it's just what it is. But yeah, so I spent the next 2 years just kind of doing whatever and still attending church sometimes and still calling myself a Christian, though I was far from it. We moved, I ended up moving first back to Wichita when I was 14. And my grandparents stayed in Texas for a little bit. They joined a few months later. So at this point in my life, I moved to Wichita to live with my mom and the rest of, I have 10 siblings, and my mom has 7 of us. So to live with the other 6 siblings of mine, no one in the family was active in church at all. No one really believed in anything. And so my faith and relationship with even the church at the time was obsolete. I never went, and though I would still tell you that I was a Christian at the time, which is crazy looking back now. I spent 2 years of being 14 and 16, getting into what seemed to be every bit of trouble that I could find. Found a group of friends, and with a couple family members, we would all get in trouble just different times and situations. So I would spend with family. We went around the neighborhoods checking people's vehicles, seeing if they were unlocked, and if they were, I scavenged through them, took whatever I wanted. Where was that? It should have been 2015 2016, somewhere around there. I don't quite remember where at in Wichita. So if it was you, I do apologize. I always lock my car now, so it's kind of ironic. But yeah, so I did that for a few months with some family. We, like I said, just walk around. Typically, when people are asleep late at night, summertime, we chose not to do anything better for us. So we always got in trouble doing that. We were pretty fast. Unfortunately, never got caught and never got busted, so never faced any consequences for that in the moment, at least. With friends, we'd go around terrorizing people's homes, knock on doors, then run. It's a little thing they called Ding Dong Ditch. I was very fast, so again, unfortunately, I never got caught, though I should have. We'd walk around just doing that any time of the night that we got bored. It was out of boredom. And though I was always with people, I take full responsibility for my decision in making, in participating in those situations. Peer pressure is a thing. It just never fell hard on me. Every time I did something, it was because I wanted to. So I take full responsibility for that. One time, 16 maybe, or 2016, I don't quite remember right now, there was a local middle school and elementary school. They're right across the street from each other. We were over there hanging out, playing basketball. Someone decided to break into the middle school. I figured, why not join them? So we all ran around the school in midsummer, so we shut down. And clearly, we weren't smart. We didn't think about the cops showing up, you know, alarms. So I'm glad they did. Again, we got away, most of us, the fastest, I guess, of us. Didn't end up facing any consequences for that either, unfortunately. I ended up talking with a detective later on, and he mispronunciated the school, so I never really got in trouble for it, as though I should have. So just spent 2 years getting in and out of trouble, though never got caught, so I don't know. In 2016, I moved to Washington State with my grandparents this time. We went up there to help out my great uncle. He was going to prison for a year, so we went to watch his property. In Washington State, we lived in a small town called Granite Falls, and they have a serious drug problem. Seems the whole state, especially Seattle, but the town I lived in did as well, with heroin and meth. So I got heavily exposed to that, to both of them. I got pretty familiar with the substance altogether, the look, how it smells when you cook it, how it looks when you put it into a needle to shoot it into your arm or wherever typically people did in their arms. Thankfully, I never got curious about that. I was always afraid of that, so I stayed away from it as much as I could, though it was in my household and it was around me pretty much every day of my life. So I got pretty familiar with, again, the withdrawals from it, what it looks like when you're high off of it, which is unfortunate, but it's a good experience, I guess, because it's, you know, it is what it is. People choose it, so I would like to know more about it. So I'm kind of happy that I had that experience from it. Spent 2 years up in Washington. So I went to one high school here. I went to the high school in Washington State, of course. Then 2 years after being there, I left my grandparents. I moved to Kansas City to live with my dad and the other four or five siblings. only one of my siblings lives with my dad. The other ones are all grown and on their own. So I moved to KC. I graduated from out there. Spent 2 years out there. Still no connection with God at all, though I stopped getting into trouble. Just different household, I suppose. They paid a little more attention with me, and none of them really got in trouble. They kind of kept their noses clean for the most part, so that was good. I moved back out to Wichita 2 years after that. It's funny, I got like a 2 or 3 year time span in places, but I came back to Wichita in 2020, I believe. At this point, my grandparents are here. My mom and them are all still here. And as we know, COVID's going on. So 2021, January 14th, my grandfather passed from a stroke. I was just bored. I don't believe that I was really depressed or saddened by it a whole lot. I decided to start drinking liquor and smoking weed. A lot of it was out of curiosity. It was around me my whole life, and I had never fell into it before then, so I was just, again, curious how that would go out, which it didn't go well. But yeah, so I fell into that for a good year. It was mainly social things, so I've been high and drunk a handful of times, enough to know what it's like and know that it's not for me. At one point, I was working for a moving company called Jackrabbit Express. It's here in town. I met a good friend, Jake. Him and his wife were going to a church called New Spring at the time. They invited me, and I went with them for a few services. Then I stopped. I didn't have a vehicle at the time, and I didn't want to continue to impose on them to give me rides. So stopped going with them to church altogether. And for whatever reason, I think some months later, I started going on my own. They were attending a different church at this time. I say for whatever reason, but I'll get into it a little bit more. I had an encounter with a lady, a young lady that I met from a family member. I didn't know her well, and I had no intentions on dating her or marrying her whatsoever. So I decided to semi hook up with her. We had made out and messed around a little bit, and thankfully it didn't go too far. A week later, she texted me that she thought, thankfully she was wrong, she thought she had some type of STD, and she claimed it was from me, though I hadn't been with anyone prior to her in any way whatsoever. I knew it couldn't have been, but I didn't want to jump to any conclusions or get angry at all. So she got tested for it. I told her, just relax. We'll see what the results come back. Those were the longest 2 weeks probably of my life. It came back negative. She continued to apologize. I told her it was all right, and we went our ways and never spoke again. It was at that point I realized I was leading nowhere good and pretty fast. So I started attending New Spring again on my own. At the end of every service, whoever is the pastor that's leading that sermon, they offer you, if you have yet to receive the Lord in your life, you can do it now. I had a mindset of I need to be clean first. Don't really know where I stand from. It just was embedded in me pretty heavily. I thought I had to, again, be clean before I approached the Lord for whatever reason, and just how it was. And during that service, it helped me realize that you don't. In fact, if you wait until you're clean to come to Christ, you're never going to get there. So I realized that at that point, and he had offered the sinner's prayer. And again, if you hadn't requested Christ to be your Lord and Savior, you could do it right here, right now. He kind of walked you through it if you chose to. And I chose to that day. Like I said, I was kind of tired of how I was living. And I believed in God, and it just didn't act like it at all. But again, I would, you know, stand and tell you that I was a Christian. So it was a lie at that time. So I decided to say the prayer with the pastor and just told the Lord I was tired of living it my way, and clearly it wasn't going well, and told him that I wanted him to take full control and surrender everything that I could to him. And I know it's not going to be easy, and it's going to be a process until I pass away and I'm before him in heaven. But I was willing to give it a shot and go for it. And that was a big thing for me, is control. So I don't know, it was kind of hard, but it was easy. I'm glad that I made that decision. And before that, I stressed out a lot. I wouldn't say that I was angry, but with my family, I had a pretty quick temper with them, specifically with my younger siblings. I tried to be their father for whatever reason. So with them, I quickly got mad at them over anything little. And like I said, I stressed out. I probably had 2 or 3 anxiety attacks up to this point in life. And after giving my life to the Lord, that's something I realized he took instantly. The next week, I had a situation with a family member, and prior to that, I would have snapped and, you know, been yelling and hooting, hollering or whatever. And I was at peace with it. And that's when I started to realize that the Lord can take things from you. And obviously he'll take the more that you surrender to him. And I learned that along the way as well. So it was pretty crazy. I've been told that plenty of times, but until you experience it, I don't think you can fully understand, or even if you ever will. But let's see, I didn't read this at all. Yeah, so I was attending New Spring towards the end of 2024 by my own. My friends ended up moving out to Atlanta. So it was just me, and I started to meet new friends as I started to volunteer. It's a pretty big church if you've ever been there, but it's easy to meet new people, obviously, when you branch out and you volunteer in different positions. I got baptized. I waited almost a year. I got baptized in April 27th, 2025. Due to when I first got baptized when I was 12, the guy that baptized me later on, a scandal came out that he may or may not have messed around with some kids at school that he was on staff for. So that kind of messed me up for a little bit. I don't know why. It just kind of threw me off with being baptized. And then as I began to read the scripture more and kind of forgave him of any wrongdoing that he may have done. So I decided to get baptized to make a public declaration that I was giving my life to the Lord. And that was one of the best days of my life. And I'm grateful for the time that I had there. I ended up leaving New Spring months after. It was just something with me going on. I didn't feel like I was receiving a whole lot of meat. I thought it was great when I first came to faith, and then I wasn't growing a whole lot. So I started looking around for other churches. I attended another local church for a month or two. I came to WBC for one service. Then I was still attending the other one. So I think 2-3 months later, I came back after praying and Googling churches. And I live right down the street, so of course, WBC pulled up. So I started reading more about them. So I decided to check it out with more serious heart posture. So I showed up and met 4 or 5 of the guys and people that I know now the first time. And it was great because that New Spring is so big. I never really met any of the pastors or anyone in the serious roles. It was always just other attendees, which is perfectly fine. But being here and being able to meet everybody that you want in your first service is something that I was craving and that I found. So it's good. And I'm grateful. And now I get bugged by Warren and Hayden and Josiah every Wednesday night, which is great. And Blake and James. So yeah, that's it. Who's next? I might have went a little early.
All right, Mr. Tom Green is going to be up. So appreciate it. It was only 35 minutes. Come on.
I can do mine in 3.5. Elijah, I used to patrol in Granite Falls, Washington. And it was known as the meth capital of Washington State. But I'm glad that there's an age difference because I was retired by the time you got there. So, well, thank you for the opportunity to share my short story. But I was born in Camarillo State Hospital in Camarillo, California, which was a mental hospital. Which explains a lot about me. My mother was a patient there, and I was immediately put into foster care, so I never met her. But I grew up with some adopted parents, and they were wonderful. But they weren't strong believers, and they, I guess, wanted me to have some training, so rather than train me themselves, they brought me to church, and the earliest I can remember I was about age 5, and they would drop me off at church and go home and come back later and pick me up. So I was kind of raised in a church that now, as I reflect on, would probably fall into the liberal category of churches, because the preacher talked about social matters and not a whole lot of depth in terms of Bible teaching. So I didn't get a whole lot of training. But when I was 12, my next door neighbor, Greg, was a year older than me, but he invited me to a church camp. And it was to go with young people from the church he attended, which was Lakewood First Baptist Church in Long Beach, California. And so I went there. It was a camp run by the Union Rescue Mission, and so it was very gospel-oriented. And I heard that was the first time I heard and, to a certain extent, understood what the gospel was. And so one evening, confessed my faith and accepted Christ as my Savior, or so I thought. And I went home after that week all excited, started reading my Bible, but I got no support from Mom and Dad. I mean, they kind of nodded their head, and that was great. But I, you know, Dad didn't teach me. And as men, we're supposed to teach our kids. And so nothing really changed in my life. The next summer, when I was 13, Greg invited me again. I went back again and did it all over. But again, went home, and there was no support there. So nothing really changed in my life. And then later on, Kathy and I met, and she happened to be attending that very same church that Greg was attending. And she was a believer, and apparently I convinced her that I was a believer too, because she married me anyway. But being the man of the house, of course, I insisted that we go to my church. So we went to my church for a few months, maybe a year. And one day, Kathy, there was kind of an order of service that was pretty regular. And so there would be hymn singing, there would be a responsive reading, there would be some teaching, and, you know, a few other things that kind of fell in there. And so one day, Kathy opens, she's got her Bible open, she's got the responsive reading book open, she's got some notes from the message and the hymnal open, and on the way home, she says to me, "Do you remember what the preacher taught on today?" And we get all the way home, and I finally answer the question, "No, I don't remember." And she said, "Well, none of it went together. None of it went together. It was a mismatch. And so that began, I started thinking about whether or not I was growing in my faith. And so after a while of kind of recognizing what she was saying, we decided that we would start attending her church instead of mine. And so I began to recognize that I was beginning to remember the points that the pastor was making, and I was learning something from the scriptures. And then finally, one Sunday night evening, we had a guest speaker. Why I can remember this guy's name is beyond me, because some of you I have met and 10 seconds later I've forgotten your name. But this guy's name was Emil Gaverluk, and he was Scandinavian by background, but he was a scientist that was also a Christian. And I don't remember exactly what he spoke about, but it moved my heart. And so there was, as typical in Baptist churches, there was an altar call. And I went forward and gave my life to Christ. And I have always, well, not always, but for many decades, I considered that to be a rededication of my life to Christ. But after a few decades of really good Bible training in the churches that we attended, I came to realize that, no, that's when I really got saved. Because that's when my life began to change. And God's word says that we're a new creature when we come to Christ. And that's when I became a new creature. And so it's been a real blessing to sit under very solid Bible teaching, because it makes a huge difference in your faith, in your walk, in your trust in the Lord. And it got us through some very difficult times with Eric's health and some other health issues in our family and some very stressful times, some difficult times at work where I had to stand up for what I believed Christ would want me to do and go through some persecution as a result of that. That's another story I'll tell you another time. But my word to parents is when your child says they want to be a Christian, when they say, I prayed last night, now I'm a Christian, watch for the fruit. Because if there's no fruit, then that commitment hasn't been made. And so that was my story, was there was no commitment to change, to live in such a way to honor Christ until I was about 23. And then things began to change. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Thank you, Tom. A couple years ago, he learned 1 Peter 4:19 that those who suffer according to God's will should commit themselves to their faithful Creator and continue to do good. And that is a verse that he's talked about, and I think of often with Tom and the way the Lord has worked in his life. So, well, Brooke Johnson, why don't you come up here? And let me encourage you all, if you haven't, you know, she was baptized here, what, has it been a month ago or something like that?
Yeah.
All right. Well, you can tell us.
My name is Brooke Johnson, for those of you that don't know already. I was born and raised in Wichita, born in 1992, so I'm 33 now. And I had a pretty rough childhood. Things were pretty good at first for the first couple years of my life. I was the only child, and I was pretty cute. So I got most things I wanted. Big blue eyes, blonde, golden locks, curls. So yeah, I got pretty much whatever I asked for from my parents. So I've been told. I don't really remember that time, but I do see pictures, and I look pretty spoiled. So there is evidence. So that was the first couple years of my life, and by the age of two, though, things had started to, there were cracks in my family. I had inadvertently told my mom about an affair that my dad was having with someone, a woman. We were in the grocery store. I have no recollection of this at all, but we were in the grocery store. I was about 2 years old, and I saw this lady with a little kid in her cart, and I said, "That's Lisa, Daddy's girlfriend." And so my mom broke up. My parents split up for, I think, about a year, and my dad moved into one of my parents' rental houses. They had a business, HLB Enterprises, Hal, LaDonna, and Brooke. My dad's name was Hal. My mom's name was LaDonna, and my name's Brooke. So, family business. And so he moved into one of the duplex rentals, and I split my time between my parents during that time. I do remember a little bit of that. I was really young, but I remember that time a little bit. And then my parents reconciled over that time apart, and my brother was born after that pretty immediately. And I was really excited to have a brother. My parents got back together, so things seemed like maybe they would be normal-ish there for a moment. But, you know, the cracks had already, they began, you know, a long time before that. And they would get bigger. The affairs would continue, and my mom was very unhappy, and we all knew that and lived with that in the house. I mean, it was not a good childhood at all. So there was chaos and strife, and at a very young age, I knew what an affair was, and I was growing up pretty quick. And by the time I was probably 12 or 13, my parents were splitting up again. And my dad was moving out like every other weekend, and I was helping him pack some of the times. And I just watched him leave and come back and leave and come back. And then one time he just didn't come back. Sorry. And so I was kind of left to the chaos of my mom. My dad was far from perfect, but at least he was calm. He didn't yell. As far as I knew, he didn't lie. So it was just very different from life with my mom. And things would get a lot worse, and the cops would be called many times. And I would eventually be taken away from my mom. She was struggling and turned to drugs and alcohol to cope with, I guess, just the pain of the infidelity and the war of the divorce. And that obviously made things worse. And so one day, I was 13, I went to school and with the shirt on my back, and I don't even think I had my backpack that morning. But my mom had had a drug, you know. She was high on drugs one morning, and I was trying to take a change of clothes to my dad's. You know, I went over there every Wednesday and spent the night, and she was obsessed with control at this point. And I wasn't allowed to take a change of clothes to my dad's because she didn't want him having any of the anything. I mean, just if it cost money, she didn't want it at his house. And it didn't matter if it was mine or whatever. It wasn't mine. Nothing was, really. I mean, so it was just petty things that, and that morning she held me down and cut my backpack off with scissors so that I didn't take a change of clothes to my dad's, and she accidentally cut me with those scissors. And she was high on drugs, so she didn't notice. And I was taken to school anyways with the bleeding hands and the... I think I was so full of adrenaline that morning, I told her I never wanted to talk to her again. And I went to school and never went home again. And I was stripped of all my earthly belongings that day. I never went back to my childhood home. I never got any of my belongings, my clothes, my pictures of myself as a child, my, you know, everything that you collect, your stuffed animals that your grandma gave you when you were little, just my dog, I left everything. And I didn't go back as a young person ever, and I didn't talk to my mom again like I said I would. And so at 13, I, being newly stripped of all my belongings and really angry about that and about just everything in general, I moved in with my dad, and I started drinking pretty much immediately. I blacked out for the first time at 13. We were actually staying at a rental property my dad still owns and I live in now currently myself. I've been remodeling it for about a year. But we lived there fresh moving out of my mom's, and it's right down the street from here, you know, funny enough. But I blacked out there for the first time at 13, hit my head on the mailbox, passed out in the front yard. So, I mean, I was angry and binging at that point already, but it would continue. So I'd make pretty good grades in school still, and I'd party on the weekends. I was 13 and free. I was able to do whatever I wanted. My dad didn't care what I did or where I was. I could walk out of the house at 3 in the morning and come back 2 days later, and it was no big deal. So it was like a whole new, you know, I was excited. I was like, I'm an adult. Like, this is awesome. I may have lost everything, but at least I don't have to deal with this chaos anymore, and I am in control of my own life, which I wasn't as good at as I thought I was. You know, you never are at that age, but I thought I would do a much better job than my parents had done. And so I began parenting myself at that point, and I got into the IB program at East High, started there, and I'd keep partying on the weekends and try to keep up with my grades. My grades ended up being pretty mediocre by the end. And then the second I graduated high school, I moved as far away as I could from here. I made sure I moved far enough away that no one would come visit me. I moved 12 hours away to Gunnison, Colorado. It was like over mountain passes. Like, there was no way people were gonna come there to see me. And so that was the point. And I didn't know a single person there. I just packed up my car and drove there and ended up staying in Colorado for about a little under 10 years. I moved from Gunnison to Crested Butte, from Crested Butte to Denver. And I'd go to school a little bit here and there, but I drank a lot during those years. I partied a lot. I was living in a ski town, so I took up that lifestyle, made a lot of the wrong friends. I started dating somebody that was really abusive physically. And I continued that way most of my 20s, honestly. I was really depressed. By my early 20s, I was suicidal. I even spent a little bit of time in a facility because I tried to harm myself. 5 days in a facility, so I never was open about my depressions again after that because I didn't want to go back to a facility like that. It didn't help, and they just drug you up, and you're with other people that are not right, and I felt like I left worse than I came, and I was many therapists in by now. I was court-ordered by 13 to go see 2 therapists, so I had, you know, a dozen by this time, and none of them could help me. I think I knew that. They all tried, God bless them, but there was just no, I was deep in hate by this time. I mean, I really hated my mom, and I think I was angry at my dad for ignoring me, for not caring. I felt like he didn't care. And so I went through, you know, that phase for a long time. About 20 years I drank, and I went through various depressions, and I tried to figure it out on my own, and I couldn't. So by 30, I realized this, that I wasn't figuring it out, and maybe I wasn't as perfect as I thought I was. I, too, was flawed, it seemed. My parents weren't the only ones, because I had totally messed up my life, I felt. So at 30, depressed, I had gone nowhere. You know, despite being pretty intelligent, you know, I was in the IB program, I had pretty good grades, I felt like I was a loser, and I was gonna be a loser. So I knew something had to change, and I was terrified to move back home. I had been to many cities by now. Utah was the newest one. And I had been gone from home about 12 years, and I decided to come back, and my mom, who I hated, and I didn't talk to her for 10 years after that day I left with the cut hands. So I was 23. I was 13 when I left that day, and I talked to her again when I was about 23. I needed money, and I was with that abusive guy, and I was in a bad way. Life was scary, and she was the only one that wanted to help me. So despite everything that had happened, I ended up kind of talking to her again, not really reconciling yet. And that would come later when I found Jesus. And it was a slow process to get me from what I'm discussing now, the darkness of being drunk all the time, you know, just the darkness I was in and how I got to where I am now. I'd say I moved home and I was at really dark. I felt like a failure. And then over time, things just kept happening with my family. I was trying to make it work and God was trying to break through to me. And so Charlie Kirk was murdered. I had started reading the Bible on my own just because I felt hopeless. I didn't know where to go. And obviously my parents didn't have the answers. Nobody had the answers. And I felt really alone. I had been struggling a long time on my own, and I didn't have very much in common with friends of mine. They had a different experience, thank goodness. But so I had started looking at other answers, and I started going to Central Christian Church for about a year before I came to this church, and I wasn't a believer. I just went because I thought maybe my way of thinking clearly isn't working, and I see it didn't work for my parents either, so maybe this is something, you know? Maybe there's something here. And so I kept going there for about a year, not believing, and there was this guy in the front row. He was really disabled, like really disabled. He could barely speak. He couldn't read. He couldn't. And he was the most, like, he was so into it every Sunday, so enthusiastic about worshiping the Lord and like Jesus, and he was so excited, and that confused me so much seeing him, because how could he be grateful? You know, my life had been hard, I thought, and I really wasn't grateful at all. I was angry about what I had been given, and look at this Todd was his name. Look at Todd, you know, look at what he had been given, and he was like really grateful. So I didn't believe, but it confused me, and I was never able to answer while I was going to that church the question of Todd. And so I stopped going to that church. I moved into that house I'm remodeling, the same one I got drunk at when I was 13, and I moved in there to go to nursing school, and it was a harrowing experience remodeling that house. It put me into a depression at first. I wasn't a believer, and that was very much suffering for me. So then after Charlie Kirk was killed and I was remodeling that house, I had recently read my parents' divorce papers also. I found out those are public record. And so a lot was coming to the surface for me, and when Charlie Kirk was killed, I remembered his advice to find a Bible-based church, and I typed in Bible-based church, and similar to some of the stories up here, Wichita Bible Church popped up. I live pretty close now. I live in that same house that I lived in when I first got blackout. So it's kind of full circle. The Lord works in very, very mysterious ways, and a lot of people, if they looked at me today up here with you all, they would be, most people actually, would be shocked. I mean, they would be confused, shocked. And honestly, at first I was as well. I mean, how did this happen? It was hopeless. There was no way out. And it really did change overnight. Once I became a believer, I was healed. The anger was gone. I forgave my parents and tried to start rebuilding those relationships. And I've changed a lot. Tom talked about fruit. There's been a lot to see, and it's hard to even explain. The people that have known me and you know, I haven't really gotten out in life yet. Right now, I'm really busy. I have nursing school and work. So families, they're the only ones that have seen me so far, but I know they're all really shocked and confused, and I can only imagine the conversations I'll have with people that used to know me when that time comes. But I'm grateful, and thank you to everyone that's had an impact on you know, where I was and where I am now. It's extreme. Tom, thanks for that Bible you gave me that first day. So it's just really cool to hear your story and then to see how it gets passed down, the faith through, you know, the older generation passing it down to me. It's just really cool to hear the stories and then to think about where I was and where I am now. And I would have laughed at someone if they told me I'd be up here. A year ago, even, I probably would have told them that they were on drugs and to give me some. So, yeah, I just, very, very different. So I'm grateful and thank God and thank you all.
Yeah, the part that I remembered was the first time she came here on a Sunday morning, didn't know the Lord yet, and as she was leaving, Tom stopped her and asked her if she had a Bible, and she said no, and he said, well, we want you to take this Bible, and a few days later, she was reading it, and she put her faith in the Lord. So, Robert, you want to come up? We have 5 minutes by the clock, but we'll give you a shot here. Thanks.
Thanks. He knows I used to teach co-pastor a church down in Derby, so he knows that preachers don't like to stop on time. So, it's interesting the sovereignty of God in all of this, hearing the different stories. I too come from a broken family, and how God uses that. My dad was Jewish. All of my grandfather, great-grandfathers, everybody on my father's side were rabbis in Europe, and two of them were killed during the German invasion in Poland. And my mom was not Jewish, so you can imagine in the 50s, a Jew and a Gentile marrying here in Kansas. Didn't go over quite well. My dad took off when I was about a year and a half old. I have a brother who's 10 and a half months younger than I am, and we were just terrors to our mother. At the age of 14, just before I turned 15, I was swimming competitively, and I was actually going to try out for the Olympics. But I went to a party, and I put my hand through a plate glass window. You can see the scar. Cut all 5 tendons, and that ruined my swimming career, literally. But while I was in the hospital, there was a good news for modern man sitting on the desk next to the bed. I was in the hospital for about a week, and during that time I read it probably about 10 times. And the good news for modern man, for most of you who don't know, is not a translation, it's a paraphrase. Yet something in that just grabbed my heart. And about a week later, we had another party at our house, and I remember we had about maybe 100 people there, and you probably know some of them that were there. Some of you know me from back in the day. There's a lot of drinking, a lot of drugs going on, and I remember standing out in the front yard and looking up in the sky for the first time in my life. I said, I wonder what God thinks about all this. And I could tell something was going on inside of me. Didn't know what it was, but something started gripping me. And on July 31st, 1971, which is older than Brooke and Elijah, I think even Tom. That's scary. That was really scary. I watched Billy Graham on TV talk about the second coming of Christ. And I gave my heart to Christ at that time. Now, no one had ever talked to me about the Lord, ever. About a month later, I had a knock on the door, and my brother had been, without my knowledge, been going to church, the old Central Christian Church downtown. Knock on the door, and Kenny Dodd shows up. Now, some of you know Kenny. See, I see the heads shaking up and down. Kenny is one of these people that when you meet him, you'll never forget him. He is about I still text with him all the time right now. In fact, he and I just texted the other day. He's about Mr. Exuberant. I open the door and he goes, "Oh, you're Robbie." I thought, "Who is this guy?" He invited me to go to Central Christian Church. There's this thing called All God's Children back in the day. It was about 150 kids at that time. It grew to 500. I went down there and I was very uncomfortable, but I ended up staying, and they had a singing group called All God's Children. They had a small group which eventually toured Australia, Hawaii, California, Arizona. I was part of the small group. Now, why, I don't know. I'm like Bruce. I can't sing worth a darn. In fact, we made a couple of albums down in Oklahoma, and they turned Mark's shoulders and my microphone off. We're not even on half the songs. The Lord was very gracious to me to put me into a situation to where I was protected back in that day from the atmosphere and the culture of the day. And in 1972, there's a thing called Expo 72. Some of you probably remember that down in Dallas. You remember it. You were there? I was there too. And we ran across a gentleman by the name of John MacArthur, who most of you know. I met John then, and a year later, he came to the old Central Christian Church and spoke for four nights. And for the first time, I heard the Word of God taught. And all of a sudden, there's something gripped inside of me where I just could not get enough of studying the Bible. 2 years later, he came back and said that he had started a Logos program, a program called Logos Bible Institute. And a good friend of mine, Warren Snyder, had gone out, and eventually eight of us had gone, went out there together and lived on a, in a house about a block from Grace Church. And that changed my life completely. And from that point forward, there was nothing more I wanted to do than study the Bible. And I eventually ended up, I'm not going to get into all of it, but I ended up going through Talbot Seminary, got my Master of Divinity, Master's of Theology, taught at the Logos Bible Institute for 20-some years, and then taught at Master's University in the Bible department, in which he was at Los Angeles Baptist this year after I graduated. I heard that Los Angeles Baptist would accept the Logos credits and knock 2.5 years off my college career, which I heard the voice, "Go west, young man, go west." Lee was there at this time. I was there. She was a cheerleader. And I've got some incriminating photographs. No, I won't say that. She's not here, is she? Good. And the Lord opened up areas of ministry that has been really just so satisfying. My best friend, who is the pastor of the church down at the EV Free Church in Derby, when we moved back here 5 years ago, it had been as a result of, after being told in 2012 I had 3 to 6 months to live. And I moved back here because I said, well, I want to be where my best friends are at. And Jeff asked me to help co-pastor a church, teach for a while. It ended up being 4 years. But we ended up coming here about a year and a month ago. We're at home here. And the moment I came in, Bruce is teaching, Bob's teaching. You guys are blessed here. I don't think you realize just how blessed you are. This is rare to have this kind of teaching here. And to have the leadership you have with Mark, Tom, this guy here. These are unique individuals. They really are. And to have the foundation you had by Charles, who I met one time briefly, and to see, get to know Andrea, you guys don't realize what you got. And I just want you to understand, the reason Julie and I joined today was because we realize what you have here. You are blessed with leadership here that very few churches ever see, especially here in the Midwest. The teaching you have here is very unique. I love verse-by-verse exposition. And to hear Bob teach and to hear Bruce teach is just, it thrills my heart. Bruce and I get together every once in a while for lunch, and we debate, we discuss, and every once in a while he'll come around to my position, and I'm sitting over there going, yes! We love you guys. We love being here. We love being a part of Wichita Bible. And the family that you guys have here is very unique and fortunate. You guys just soak it in. This is very special. So anyway, I went 5 minutes over, Warren. Sorry. That's my background.
Thanks, sir. Well, thank you. Thanks for those words of encouragement too, Robert. So thank you all for those who shared. Appreciate your courage to get up here and do that. It's a blessing to all of us. So without further ado, you all can be dismissed. There should be a foyer full of kids out there. Haven't even heard them. So, but thank you all. And we get 7 weeks, I think, now without equipping classes or children's classes during the second hour. So the teachers all get a break, and we'll resume normal scheduling in August. But